There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines and top debate. This is The Grill, live from Barasti with Tom Urquhart on DubaiEye1038.
Tom Urquhart, Chris McCarty and Dale Gordon with you through until 7 o'clock this evening. Let's just get the latest from Dale with regards to the early kickoff in the Premier League. He's watching West Ham against Chelsea.
Yeah, still remains West Ham 1, Chelsea 0, but Chelsea's best part of the first half. Lots of pressure from them, obviously pinning West Ham back in their own sort of last third. I think Kante on 25 minutes actually burst through, just dropped his shoulder and had a shot which Adrian done ever so well just to parry past the post, went out for a corner. 2 minutes later, Zaba Costa as well, who's come into the starting line for Chelsea. Again, another shot whipped into that exactly the same post where Kante went in for, and Adrian read that as well, another corner. And finally as well, 2 minutes later, whipped in from the right-hand side, Chelsea, more pressure from Chelsea. Morata failed to get on the end of a cross, just glance his header really without trying to put too much power on it, but I just really want to get a good contact. But still remains West Ham 1, Chelsea 0, but Chelsea definitely coming back into it.
Right, time for us to head down to the Emirates Golf Club for an update.
This is a DubaiEye 103.8 live update
from the Omega Dubai Ladies Classic, the major of the Middle East. Hashtag made for greatness.
I think it's done. It's the Omega Dubai Ladies Classic. I think we have a result. The man to ask that question is Robbie Greenfield. He's live down at the Emirates Golf Club. Have we got a result, Rob?
We do indeed, Tom. Yes, we have a result, and it is the American Angel Yin, the 19-year-old, who has recorded her first professional win courtesy of a playoff, the first playoff ever to take place at the Omega Dubai Ladies Classic in the 11 years that this tournament has been running. I'm watching the prize presentation now, and she really, really earned this one, did the teenager.
I don't know much about Angel Yin, I've got to be honest with you, Robbie. What do we know about her? A teenager, so I take it, what, 19 years of age?
She's 19, Chris. She made her Solheim Cup debut in 2017. She had 5 top 10s on the ladies' PGA Tour over in the US, earning about $455,000 for her troubles. So not bad for a 19-year-old, it has to be said. And well, she's come here and she's beaten off the reigning British Open champion in a playoff. And, well, she did it in brilliant style, I've got to say, because she nearly threw it away in regulation. On the 17th hole, a penultimate hole in regulation, she missed a 3-foot putt for birdie, which would have sealed the triumph. And then she drove into the water on 18. She dropped from the water, hit a third shot onto the green, and made par in a spectacular finish, which forced the playoff with IK Kim, who'd earlier shot a round of 65. Celine Herbin was also involved in a three-way playoff because she'd gone out earlier during the day and shot a 64. So all three of those players finished on 15 under. And it was Angel Yin who did the most in the playoff to earn the victory. She made a birdie up 18. They went down 17, just IK Kim and Angel Yin, and it was IK Kim who blinked first, missing from 8 feet for birdie. Angel had driven through the green, up and down, and she is your champion for 2017. She's quite the character, I'm told. I'm hoping to get an interview with her in a couple of minutes' time. But what a start to a career. Nearly $500,000 earned on the LPGA Tour this year, and rounding off the year with victory in the most prestigious tournament on the Ladies European Tour.
Before we let you go, Robbie, Angel Yin then, champion down in Dubai, up in Abu Dhabi a few weeks back, the Fatima Bint Mubarak Ladies Open. It was a DT, a shock, a young girl herself. So fair to say that women's golf right now, it is all about the youth, and it's an exciting place.
Definitely. No, I absolutely agree with you. And if you're over the age of 20 in women's golf, you're a bit long in the tooth, because they all seem to be coming out and winning at the age of 17, 18, 19. Aditi actually played well this week, it has to be said. She finished in a fifth place, tied for fifth, with Charlie Hull. We were just talking the other day, weren't we, Chris, about the fact that Charlie Hull is one of the veterans now out on tour in her early 20s. She was Rookie of the Year just a couple of years ago. They all finished on 12 under par. Anne Van Damme, and yes, I will resist making that pun, finished on 13 under, alone in fourth place. But it's props to Angel Yin. She is your champion for 2017. And in a few moments' time, I will be interviewing her.
We'll let you get off and do that interview. We'll catch up with you again in a little while later on. Robbie, thanks so much indeed for the update there. Robbie Greenfield giving us the latest update. Angel Yin wins it. That's a headline writer's dream, isn't it?
It is. Angel Yin. Yeah, I'm just thinking, well, maybe I have to concoct, or we'll Angel get Robbie.
Investors or Angel, oh, I don't know.
Angel, yeah, yeah. Well, there is one in there. We'll come up with it. We'll get Robbie thinking cap. He's the wordsmith out of the Sports Tonight team, but we'll get him thinking on that. But yeah, wonderful victory. I've got to be frank and very honest and say I don't know much about Angel Yin there. She's clearly a very talented individual.
She's 19. She's very enigmatic. she's got,
American.
She made a Selheim Cup debut just last year, in fact. She's American.
Well, I think she got $400,000.
$400,000, yeah.
Yeah. Robbie's done
his, don't know anything about her.
Robbie's done his Wikipedia dump over the course of the past hour. That's what Robbie's done. But yeah, congratulations to her. That's a fantastic victory. And the fact that it went to a playoff as well, which means that the punters who turned out down at the Emirates Golf Club today have been treated to a real festival of fantastic golf. And yeah, congratulations to Angel. I'll look forward to now seeing where that party is this evening and maybe popping on down.
Emirates Golf Club has just hosted the ladies' golf. There's plenty going on around town. You were down in Abu Dhabi yesterday.
F1 H2O World Power Boating, the penultimate race down in the nation's capital, down there on the breakwater. Our first experience, I've got to be honest, Tom, and say our first experience of power boating over the course of this week. I'm very, very impressed. We were there between 2 and 5pm down on the breakwater, live broadcast yesterday. The race itself was won by the reigning three-time world champion Philippe Chiappe, the Frenchman. He has ensured that the title race will go down to next week's final race of the season in Sharjah. The man currently in the lead of the driver standings is Alex Carella of Team Abu Dhabi. He himself is a three-time world champion. The last time he won it was back in 2012. So it set up that grandstand finish. I've already told the missus we're going to be popping on down to Sharjah next week to finish it all off and watch it again, because it lasts an hour. It's pretty exciting. It's fast. It's furious. There weren't probably as many crashes or as overtaking as perhaps we would have wanted yesterday. Of course, we want everyone to be safe. That goes without saying. But it was a fantastic drive, no doubt about it, from Philippe Chiappe. He took the victory. And what he has done is he's ensured that that title race goes down to next weekend in Sharjah.
Is it true that you got into one of these beasts?
I did. Yes, I clambered in on, what morning was it? Thursday morning. I had no clue that I was going to be doing this. I simply got collared. Said, Chris, listen, you're coming with us. I was like, okay, I'm not going to argue. And then thrown into one of the two-seaters. Just the speeds that the boats get up to. You're literally hovering over the water. You're skimming the water. It's a rather smooth ride, in fairness. About 200 kilometres an hour. It's the way they hurtle you and throw you into the corners that made my kind of hair stand up. It's literally 90 miles per hour, and they're turning you on a sixpence. The G-force is extraordinary. You're slamming into the side of the boat. That being said, thankfully I was only in it for about 5-6 minutes. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And looking forward to next week's racing, because I'm going to pop on down there, and who knows, I might get clamber back into one of those two-seaters as well.
That's what's been going on down on the breakwater, the Corniche down in Abu Dhabi over the last couple of days. You had it right here on Dubai High. What have you? Go on. What are you thinking?
Nothing. Carry on.
carry on, Pike. All right. We will carry on up the Khyber, and we will continue with our look at what's going on locally, because we've mentioned the fact that there is, of course, the F1 power boating going on down in Abu Dhabi. We mentioned the fact that ladies golf has been here in Dubai, but we also need to mention the fact that the FIFA Club World Cup is underway. Nice result for the local team early on in the
very
week.
Very good win, yeah. It was over Auckland City. I won a win for Al Jazeera. I didn't manage to get up there, of course. We had Sports Tonight during the midweek. I've spoke to numerous people who were up there, Tom, and said that, in fairness, Al Jazeera rode their luck a little bit. Auckland City had chances. Unfortunately, they couldn't put them away, and Al Jazeera got the big result, which means they will be in action a little later this evening in the quarterfinals. They will take on the Asian Champions League winners, Urawa Red Diamonds. They come from Japan, and I can tell you it's kickoff in the earlier quarterfinal between Pachuca of Mexico and Wydad Casablanca. They are your African Champions League winners. So it brings all the continental champions together. It's a festival of football over the course of the 10 days. Real Madrid arrive in town tomorrow. They will await the winners of Al Jazeera and Urawa Red Diamonds. They will take on them on Wednesday in the semi-final. And then I think we are all of the opinion that Real Madrid will get the job done in that game, and they will be taking part in the showpiece final this time next Saturday.
And do we have an interview with yourself and Mr. Ronaldo?
Unfortunately not, Dale, not yet. I'll continue to make phone calls, but I think the chances of us sitting down with Mr. Ronaldo
are nil and void. That's a bit disappointing, to be honest, because you get the interview with everybody.
I will try. I will try. I think Tom Urquhart will probably be the man to sit down with Ronaldo. He's the man with the black book and the contacts, but... Yeah, right now we're being told no.
Tickets available for the competition?
Tickets very much available for the competition. The final, I am told, is a sellout, as is the second semi-final involving Real Madrid, as you'd expect so. But yeah, tickets still very much for sale. Just log on to the FIFA website. I think it's /UEFIFA Club World Cup. All of the details on there. But yeah, very much so. You've got, what have you got? Well, you've got the first games kicked off, Pachuca, Wydad, Casablanca. The late kickoff this evening is Al Jazeera against Urawa Red Diamonds. That one kicking off at 8:30. So if you fancy watching some live football, then by all means, log into the FIFA website, FIFA.com, and all the ticket information is up there. But it's a great event. Great that Abu Dhabi are staging it once again. They will be staging it this time next year. And then, of course, a rather quick turnaround before the Asian Cup in 2019.
You mentioned the certain Cristiano Ronaldo will be on the plane with his Real Madrid teammate in the next few days. The forward has won his fifth Ballon d'Or yesterday, taking him level with Lionel Messi's record. Zinedine Zidane has since said that Cristiano Ronaldo is the greatest player of all time. Well, you'd expect your manager to say that, really, wouldn't you? Any arguments with this one?
Well, especially as they go for a little bit of a difficult spell.
Yeah, good point. Any arguments? Yeah, I do. I would argue this until I'm blue in the face, despite the fact that I am, as most will know, a Manchester United fan, spent 6 years watching Ronaldo.
I thought you said we'd blue in the face.
No.
You're not a smurf, are you?
Sometimes. But, yeah, Ronaldo is a fantastic player, no doubt about it. Unfortunately, though, he's not even the greatest of his generation.
I'll go with Messi. I just think as natural talent, Messi. But as a player who has worked his socks off to get to the highest pinnacle of his career and in his profession, without a doubt, Ronaldo fully deserved the award as well, Tom,
yeah,
I must say. But I think the tides may well be turning. I think after Russia 2018, I think if a certain Neymar has a really good season with PSG in the Champions League, to see how far they go, and a good World Cup, we could see a little bit of a change.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think Neymar could very well. I think PSG alongside Manchester City have been the two teams that have really impressed me in the Champions League. You'd probably chalk them up as the favourites right now. And then, you know, looking at that Brazil team, and myself and Robbie discussed it at great length on Monday Night Football with James Pearcey, it's very difficult. Brazil have finally, I think, got a manager who's tactically astute. Dunga never really convinced me. Tite, on the other hand, is someone who's done well in his opening few months. It's not months now, it's over 12 months, but in his kind of first year in charge, he's done very well. And I think Brazil will undoubtedly, as they always are heading into a World Cup final, is one of the favourites, and this could be the chance for Neymar to rubber stamp himself as in that top echelon alongside Messi and Ronaldo in world football.
A Real play Sevilla today in La Liga, then they jump on a plane and come out to the UAE. Quick footnote to that one as well is that Gareth Bale will be on the plane. He's out with a calf injury at the moment, but he will travel with the rest of the team, so he is coming to the UAE for the FIFA Club World Cup, which is ongoing at present. As Chris mentioned, Real facing Al Jazeera or Uruguay Reds in the semi-final on Wednesday. Zidane confirming earlier that that's Gareth Bale, will travel with us to the Club World Cup. We'll see if he's available for the first game.
So, and is he in Barasti on Wednesday?
He probably will.
Might well be. If they're going to get the job done early doors,
then they'll pop on down and have a night out down here. Yeah. Perhaps they will. No, in all seriousness, this is very much just a mission that they'll fly in, they're here for a week, they'll have a business on their minds, and then it's a bit of a distraction. They want to win it, of course.
It's a distraction I think they could probably do without at the moment as well, Chris. You know, with their current form in La Liga, it's not gone as well as everybody expected. We meant it. I remember the pre-season and saying that it was Barcelona was probably the worst Barcelona team going into La Liga season. It's Real Madrid's title to be lost from themselves. And I just think that, there's, I think, Ronaldo's injury at the beginning of the season has been a hindrance to them. Bale as well, the controversy about if he's going to stay, if he's going to leave to go to Manchester United. There's been all sorts of things happening in that football club, even to the manager's position. Has his position become a little bit untenable as well because of the results lately? And Pochettino is an early favourite, maybe Zidane goes, because not all's going well at Spurs as well.
Look, I get the sort of purpose for the FIFA Club World Cup? It's great for the local region, you know, get to see world-class players. But I wonder, you know, whether it's serving its purpose at the moment. I can see what FIFA are trying to do, taking the footprint and taking champions around the world, etc. But as you mentioned there, it's a bit of a hindrance for clubs that are in the middle of their seasons, like a Real, very much involved still in Europe as well as domestically. I wonder whether it is sort of serving its purpose.
It's a difficult one. Robbie and I debated this at length in the week, Tom. It's for Real Madrid, it's a hindrance, no question about it. They've got, I don't want to be disrespectful to the tournament, but they've got bigger fish to fry. Chasing down Barcelona at the top of La Liga being one of those, ensuring that, well, they'll hope now that they've booked their place in the last 16 of the Champions League. We'll look out for Monday for the draw, but for Zinedine Zidane, this is something, this week is probably something he doesn't need, but they're here, they'll want to win it, huge pressure on them to do so. For the other teams, Tom, I think it is a welcome distraction. I think Auckland City, the chance for them to put on the global stage. I know South America, they put a huge value on the FIFA Club World Cup. To them, winning this is bigger than for Gremio, who are the South American representatives. They won the Copa Libertadores a little earlier. Back end of last month, they defeated Lanús from Argentina over the two legs. This, for them, for the South American teams, is the biggest thing in club football. For Real Madrid, no, it's not. Winning, let's be frank, the UEFA Champions League, La Liga, you could make an argument to say even winning the Copa del Rey for Real Madrid is bigger than the FIFA Club World Cup. Now that they're here, though, there's pressure on them to win.
Well, I wonder whether, because you know, here we see that, you know, they're confirming that they are getting on the plane and all the big names are coming out. I wonder whether they are contracted to obviously bring a full-strength team, because it'd be very easy for them to come with an academy side or an understrength team or a second 11. But I wonder, who gets named and turns out for the starting 11
maybe
on Wednesday.
Some pressure that has been applied at the top, and I wouldn't rule that out. Real Madrid are a beacon. They are one, undoubtedly, they're an institution. They're one of the biggest, if not the biggest, football club in the world, and they've got a responsibility to the tournament, responsibility to their fans. It will be interesting to see what team they put out, because if it is, and I do expect Urawa Red Diamonds to have too much for Al Jazeera a little later on. We saw Real Madrid.
I do.
I think Urawa Red Diamonds will have too much for Al Jazeera. I really do. We saw 12 months ago, Real Madrid struggled against Kashima Antlers. They actually took them to extra time in the final of this particular tournament. So Zidane will chop and change. He'll mix it up. They've got a huge game tonight, do Real, against Sevilla. That one kicking off at 7:15. They need a favourable result there. Then Zinedine Zidane, Zizou will look at his squad. He has great trust. And I think one of the things that Florentino Perez and certainly Zinedine Zidane has earned is that trust, because he gives the full trust to his young boys. He chopped and changed and he really utilised the full squad last season. We've seen him starting doing that this season as well. So he will utilise that squad. I don't think we'll see all the big stars out on Wednesday evening. If they get through that one into the final, you're then going to see a fully strength Real Madrid team.
I think it's important as well as you know, for the UAE, the fact that they want to have this event here and they want to put on a really fantastic spectacle. I'm sure it will be. And I think they will have the big hitters go out. Like Chris said, you know, the further they go in the competition, it wasn't so long ago, was it, that they played AC Milan, Real Madrid at the sevens, and again it was a game where thousands turned up for the match and they did pick up, you know, play their big hitters. And I think it's important, you know, as a brand and you know, for the UAE as well, building on the success of not just in football but all the sports they're holding over here now. It's a building on that from that.
I suppose that's part of my concern here, is the fact that, you know, it needs to be recognised as a competition rather than an exhibition. And I don't know if the lines are being blurred at the moment.
A little bit. I think, honestly, a little bit, because of the competitiveness of it. And you know, let's be frank, Real Madrid at walking pace would beat Auckland City.
So what purpose does it fit?
There is that. And you know, I know FIFA, there was an article, about a month or so ago, FIFA had admitted they were exploring about extending it, expanding it, adding more teams in. But then it just becomes, you know, even more, and I guess, fanciful to expect the likes of what do you open it up to? Do you open it up to last season's Champions League winners, last season's Copa Libertadores winners, or what do you do? One idea that Robbie put forward midweek was maybe you invite the second competition winners, so the Europa League winners, for example, from Europe would come with the Champions League winners. The Copa Sudamerica would come alongside the Copa Libertadores, so you go the second rung down competition, so that it really becomes then a champion of champions, if you will. But it's so very difficult Tom. The other thing we've not even discussed, it's already a jam-packed calendar.
That's what I mean,
with international games, with club games, with Champions League games. I mean, we've shoehorned this into 10 days.
I mean, it is. And I don't think it only seems like a couple of years ago that Manchester United made the decision not to actually enter into the FA Cup.
And, 2000,
and, you know, I think they went to South America, didn't they? And went over there and played in exactly the same competition and sacrificed the FA Cup, which...
And it doesn't help either.
It doesn't help.
And you're right to point that out, Dale. It doesn't help that the players themselves, the Dwight Yorks, the Mikels who we've caught up with, they've all said, you know what? We did look at it as a bit of a jolly, as a bit of a holiday. It was a chance for us to go out to Brazil and get some sun on the back. And to tie in with what you're saying, I think it's fair, Tom, for you to raise the issue. It does have that exhibition feel when you look at the setup of the comp. Al Jazeera play Auckland in a preliminary knockout to get to the quarter-final. Real Madrid and Gremio already waiting in the semi-finals. That is why I think you're right, Tom, that for a lot of maybe fair-weather fans, they look at it and think, well, that isn't a competition. We were always brought up in knockout cup competitions or two group stages then into the knockouts, whereas this is very much tailored to the South American representative, in this case Gremio, and Real Madrid, the European representative, because they're just the better teams.
But then from an organiser's point of view, I'm wondering whether, you know, if you've got this imbalance, if you're going to get, you know, tens of thousands turning up only to watch Real Madrid or possibly Al Jazeera as well, and yet you've got other teams in the competition and you haven't got those sort of crowds turning up, you're sort of losing something. You're going back to the exhibition.
Well, yeah, and that's where, I guess that's where the media come into it, and you know, we can only do so much, but I guess it's up to us as part of that to really push the narrative on who these teams are. It's very difficult to get fans up to speed quickly on who Auckland City are, because there's no tangible link other than being Mark Archer and being from Auckland, or
Emirates fly there.
Emirates fly there, perhaps any Kiwis out there. It's very difficult to get someone who's been brought up, lived and breathed Premier League, let's say in the Champions League, why would they turn out to watch Auckland City when they're not really aware of the storyline, their heritage, their tradition, their history? It's very difficult to convince fans to do that. And that, I guess, is probably the biggest challenge facing organisers, local organisers and FIFA, is how to make more of the narrative behind these teams that are coming over from far-flung places on the planet. And, of course, the other aspect to all of that is Auckland City are not going to go toe-to-toe with Real Madrid.
And also, as well, we see how poorly the attendances are as well in the Pro League, as well in the UAE Pro League as well. So, you know, it is difficult, but, you know, names put bums on seats.
And I wonder, I mean, we talked a lot about responsibility, the club's responsibility, the tournament responsibility of the fans, to investors, media. But I wonder as well if another narrative to this is, you know, look at it from an Auckland player's point of view. Once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to play against some of the greatest players.
Undoubtedly. I mean, for them, they've come all this way and they've lost 1-0 to Al Jazeera.
Buy a ticket and watch it.
So they've now got to go back home.
Opportunity to put themselves in the shop window.
Well, that's it as well, yeah. I do wonder how much stock is put in this tournament in terms of scouts, etc. Because I do think, Tom, and I think you've been fair and you'd right to point it out, that there will be an awful lot of people. Let's not pull cotton wool over people's eyes. There will be an awful lot of people out there who think of it as an exhibition. This is a chance for Real Madrid to come out of Europe, to play in the Middle East, to play two games where they will both start game, well, they'll certainly start the semi-final. They need to win that, of course, but they'll start that semi-final, whether it is against Urawa Red Diamonds, whether it is against Al Jazeera, they'll start as overwhelming favourites.
Well, they will do, and also Zidane, I think, like you said, that because of their current form as well, Chris, that they'll go into those two games to gain a bit of confidence, and at the end of the day as well, there is a trophy up for grabs as well, so, you know, they will want to come over, and as well as the exhibition side of it, they'll want to do a good job. And things as well, sometimes you take your foot off the pedal as well in them sort of games, that's when you can pick up injuries as well. So Zidane will make sure they're finally well-tuned. You know, they'll come over after, like Chris has mentioned, a very difficult game against Sevilla, you know, and no doubt obviously prepare right for it. Probably put a weakened team out in the first one, but as they go into it, you know, they will have to obviously pick the pace up, because they do not want to be going back to the domestic league in La Liga, obviously on the back of poor performances.
And they're
again
looking to make history as well, Tom. No team, of course, in this tallies with the fact that no team had won the Champions League back-to-back until Real Madrid did it last season. No team has ever, obviously, won the FIFA Club World Cup back-to-back as well. So Real Madrid can make history here this week. That, I'm sure, will be... You know, that will be on their minds. They'll want to set a new record, set a new milestone. That is the very nature of what Real Madrid Football Club is all about. So that will be there in front and centre. But I expect them to get the job done. I expect them to win, Tom. But yeah, whether this tournament needs a little revamp is certainly up for debate.
Listen, no shortage of characters in the world of football at the moment, certainly from the management point of view. And I think we just got to, before we go to the break at the bottom of the hour, take our hats off, our respective hats off, to Paulo Fonseca, who is our star of the week. Yeah. I mean, talk us through this one. So he made a promise to fans before the game, is that right?
Yeah, he made a promise that if Shakhtar Donetsk were to qualify from the group, that he would dress up as in the mask of Zorro, yeah. the Antonio what's his name?
Banderas. Yeah.
Banderas, that's the one. Yeah, yeah. Melanie Griffiths. He was formerly married to that actor. Anyway, I'm going off piste. Paulo Fonseca. That's my Showbiz Daily Mail lunchtime guilty pleasures. He was he promised that he would dress in the press conference as Mask of Zorro, and sure enough, after the 2-1 victory over Manchester City, the amassed media waiting for the post-match press conference, and he walks with a black hat, the black mask, and all in black. So you've got to give full props to Paulo Fonseca. That one has gone viral. He's a good manager. There was some talk that Everton were keen to appoint him before Sam Allardyce got the nod, and I don't think it will be long before we see Paulo Fonseca in charge of a major club in
mainland Europe. I thought he was going to say, it won't be long before we see Sam Allardyce in the Zorro mask.
Don't think there's one that could potentially fit that big noggin of his.
It's just, I just love the sort of the thinking that must have gone into this, because, you know, it's great, because it's not, you know, it's no small measures. It's a proper Zorro outfit, you know, with the cape, he's got the mask, he's got the hat, he's got the full fandango there. It must have been hanging up somewhere. So it just, it would have been this thing before the match. You know, it doesn't, is it going to get used? It's not going to get used. You know, imagine if they'd gone out.
Can you imagine the shirts all being lined up, hang up on the pegs, and at the end of a Zorro outfit.
I'm just thinking.
And the horse waiting outside for him in the tunnel.
Oh, dearie me.
We are going to take a short break when we come back. More live sport for you, listening to The Grill live from Brass.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Listen to The Grill, live from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti. The sun is setting. Beautiful evening down here, and plenty of live sport to get your head around. Let's get to the Premier League. Got Dale Gordon alongside us. Coming out for the second half, Dale.
Yeah, second half, Chelsea made a substitution. Pedro has come on, but I'm not too sure, Tom.
Bakayoko, is it?
Bakayoko.
I think it is number 14, yeah. Bakayoko.
I think Chelsea, I mean, look, David Moyes would be absolutely delighted at the two managers, and I think that going in at half-time 1-0 up, Chelsea did have a little bit of pressure at the end of the first half, but, you know, the performance from the West Ham players has been absolutely outstanding. And in fact, what I've got to say, to be honest with you as well, Adrian has been outstanding in goal. He's made two or three great saves. But overall, though, West Ham have definitely pressured Chelsea and forced them into mistakes. And obviously with Pedro, as you know, Conte's made that change of Pedro coming on, so they feel that they need now to obviously make a few more owners going forward, penetrate him in midfield, and obviously his ability to score that won the goal as well, they'll certainly need him.
Let us turn our attention to the world of cricket now. Let me just put you in the picture as to what's going on. We've got a test match going on down in Hamilton at the moment. New Zealand are playing the West Indies in the latest test match of this series, which has been very one-sided thus far. That said, West Indies fought well today. They reduced New Zealand to 286 for 7 from the 87 overs that were bowled today. It stumps on day one of the second test down there. New Zealand 286 for 7. England are in action. Well, an England 11 are in action against a Cricket Australia 11 ahead of the next test match in Perth. Cricket Australia 11 trail by 252 runs with 9 wickets remaining in the first innings. They're currently on 62 for 1. England 11 at 314 for 9 declared in their particular, in their innings as well. So those are the internationals that are going on for you. There's also cricket taking place here in the UAE at the moment. We'll have more details on that. But I suppose the big story with regards to cricket is is in and around the England team down in Australia. Yet more allegations today. Ben Duckett dropped from this tour match from the, he was meant to be playing in the England 11. Again, another incident after hours, out and about, celebrating a game, or, well, there's not much to celebrate at the moment, so out and about. The only thing is that it seems to be distracting from the tour, this? This has become the big tour talking line.
And this has become the biggest farce. And time and time again, Tom, it seems to happen with England, whether it's their football team, now it's the case of their cricket team. What is going off the pitch, what is going on away from the field is detracting from what is going on. And right now, Trevor Bayliss and Andrew Strauss have to be very careful. They've got to get a handle on this because this is running away from them. Yeah. This series is going to be a 5-0 whitewash. There are going to be a massive backlash, a huge fallout because something is not right. The discipline in that team, that comes from Joe Root as well, by the way, the captain. He's got to get a grip of this because right now, it seems seemingly every single day we're waking up to new stories and stories that do not cover in any way, shape or form the England cricket team in any good light. Ben Duckett dropped, as you rightly pointed out, for, and again, this is only reports, but for pouring a drink over a senior member of the England team. There's been a fallout.
James Anderson.
Is that who it was? James Anderson. Okay, so you know more than I do on that front. So they've clearly had a set too in a bar in Perth.
Not at all, though. This is the problem. This is my issue with it, is there was no issue between those two. It was just them celebrating. They're great mates, you know. The Lions boys had come together with a test team. It was just pranks. It was bants, as you'd say. However, media have got a hold of it. It's leaked out.
Is that what it was? It was bants. It was a...
completely. Yeah. There was no aggro. There was no issue whatsoever. But it's much like the headbutt issue with Johnny Bairstow at the moment.
Strange.
Nothing in that at all.
No.
Absolutely nothing in it. Australian players didn't complain about it. The players within themselves didn't complain about it. It's only once it gets out, then the management need to be seen to take some sort of action, which is what has happened here with Bayliss.
It surprises me though. If it was nothing and if it was banter, surely the first thing that you do is forget what the media is saying. You sit down the individuals, you say, guys, what's going on? Because you're making a mountain out of a molehill. He has been suspended, as you say, he was dropped today. If it was just banter, why on earth do you need to do that? I don't get that. That doesn't make sense to me. And right now, England, I don't know who's managing them from a PR perspective, but Andrew Strauss, Trevor Bayliss, Joe Root, you've got to sit them down. They're grown men, for goodness sake. You can't exactly wrap them up in cotton wool or do what Fabio Capello did at the World Cup in 2010 and put bans and curfews on them. You've got to let the men lead their lives, Tom. But right now, they've got to be far more responsible than what they're doing.
I don't think I agree. I mean, I think it again, I'd love to get your thoughts, Dale, in terms of when, you know, we all know that, okay, they're grown men and they're men of responsibility, and in this age of mobile phones and cameras on every single phone, you've got to be careful. But they're out with the security team. Mm. The security boys were with them. Big Reg and the rest of the team were with them.
Big Reg.
They
I take your point, but
we all get up to a bit of silliness, you know, when you celebrate, you're out letting your hair down with your teammates, you do silly things.
Okay, do silly things all the time. Yeah, the thing is, as well, unfortunately, well, I was like, should we say fortunately, then
there was no social media.
No social media. So
probably a good thing.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But you're right to point that out. But two things then, Tom, and I'll put it back to you on this. There's nothing to celebrate. They've just lost again. So what are they celebrating? What are they going out and having? And
again, because you've just made that point. You can't lock them away in the hotel. You've got to say, you know what, boys, you're going to go stir crazy for that. So, look, go out. You've got a curfew. As long as you're back by 11 o'clock, midnight, whatever the curfew is, great. Enjoy yourself. You know, you've got training tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Be there.
100%. Second to that would then be, you know that there's all these issues, the nonsense, and I'm with you, by the way, on the Johnny Bairstow. It's a nothing story. Even Cameron Bancroft, the way he was describing it, he was trying to make something of it when there actually wasn't anything there. Surely there's a responsibility for the players to say, listen, guys, we don't need any more nonsense. We don't need our names to be back in the papers over something. Let's just tame it down. Now, I'm not privy to what went on. You say it was a bit of banter, a pouring over a drink, and it was a laugh and a giggle. If that was the case, then you're right to point out there's no case to answer for here. If it wasn't, then we're here again talking about more nonsense off the pitch when we should be discussing what's going wrong on the pitch and how they go about correcting it.
I think the fact that because they are 2-0 down in the series as well, doesn't help matters. And then if you flip the coin as well and you look back in Euro 96 when England, when we had the
infamous dentist
armchair with Gazza and Sherring and everything else, and obviously when Gazza scored against Scotland and they ran over to the side of the pitch and with the water bottle squirted Gazza with the water bottle, you know, but that was before the tournament, and also as well they did react from so we say bad press and actually went on and had arguably probably the best opportunity to win a major championship since 66, and but you know. Like you said, Chris, I think that when you're losing the series 2-0
regardless if it's banter or not. I don't think that would really be the right way to react in a way that obviously people will be reporting on it.
Well, I'll put it to you, Tom. You're shaking your head still on this one. Do you think there's an agenda? Is there an agenda from the UK press? Are they happy with Strauss? Are they happy with Bayliss? What is there? What are they reporting on this? Why are they pushing the fact that there seems to be issues and that these men seem to be irresponsible?
There is an agenda, but it's not from the UK press. It's from the Australian press, because the Australian press know the way that they can get under an Ashes touring team is to pick up on these little minutiae, you know, and just redress that balance. The whole headbutt thing only came out because of stump cam, because of the stump microphone, and Davey Warner's sledging of Johnny. That's how it came out. No one knew about it until then. It wasn't reported. It wasn't a big issue. It came out because, and it's been very clever, the way that the Australian team have been dropping these little bits of pieces, these little vignettes, these little stories, these little bits of ammunition. I understand as well from my sources, there's a very big one about to break in the next couple of days. Well, again, whenever Australia need it. They don't need it at the moment. They've got England on toast, you know. But there is another story that is brewing, I understand, at the moment, which is going to break before the boys come back home.
Interesting, which will show what England in a bad light yet again.
Yeah, but whereas these have been little bits of, you know, little bits and pieces, little bits of nonsense that have been blown out of all proportion by the Australian media, I hasten to add, by the Australian media, because they know it unsettles teams, and they've done that.
Let's turn it around then. We have heard numerous times Matt Prior, BBC Five Live this past week, saying that there's been underhand tactics used in sledging. I think we all agree sledging is part and parcel of cricket. There's a lot of naysayers out
mental
there.
Mental disintegration.
As long as you don't cross a line, it's been suggested that a line has been crossed. We were talking about this one off air. Again, it's conjecture. We don't want to get into the specifics. It would only be us speculating. Will that come out? And I put this to you then, Tom. If Australia and the Australian press are pushing all of the buttons and leaking this and making more out of stories than perhaps there isn't there, why haven't England come out to name and shame those individuals who have crossed the line with regards to a certain individual?
Because I think that they're not holier than thou. I think England have given as good as they take. I think it's an accepted element of the game, certainly in Ashes as well. And you know what? It's the one that we all talk about. You know, it's the one we talk about once they retire and get round on doing a Q&A or something like that. Who's the best bit of sledging you've ever had? And who's the worst bit of sledging? It's interesting, these comments coming out from Johnny Bairstow in the last 24 hours, saying that if they cross the line again, he's happy with the sledging. He's been targeted, but he said that they have crossed the line again. We're not at liberty to say what that line is at the moment. You can make your own assumptions given Johnny Bairstow's background and his history and things like that, but he's not gone there because he's not going to give it the dignity, you know. So
he has said if
you do it again, there is going to be issues, and there is no love lost between these two teams. And I think it is getting to that point that things could well boil over. I think the interesting point from this story that's come out is the role of the stump mic. I mean, what does it give the game of cricket at the moment? All it does is cause problems.
Yeah, well, Trevor Bayliss has said, I think it was after the first test, he wants the stump mics turned down. Turn them down. There's young kids watching. It offers nothing. Let that, as you call it, mental warfare, let that go on out there. I think an awful lot of people, and we got a lot of text in on this in the week, a lot of people out there will say sledging is fine. There is a line that can be crossed. You can push those boundaries, but sledging is fine. There are others that, would argue that it's bullying, a form of bullying. Now, I'm probably with you on this. I think sledging is part and parcel, as long as it doesn't cross a line. But Trevor Bayliss has said, turn down the mic stumps. The fans at home, young kids watching in on this series, and it is undoubtedly the biggest test series in the world. Pakistan and India, we know, don't collide enough, and we would like to see a lot more of their battles on the cricket field. That doesn't happen. So right now, the Ashes, Australia-England, is the biggest thing that ICC Test Arena has at its disposal. And why not just turn the mic stumps down? We don't need to hear that. Young kids don't need to hear that. Yes, it goes on. We accept it goes on. But of course, in this day and age, the thirst for information, the TV executives, they want us to be able to hear that, because what does it do? It fuels all the column inches, and it fuels this conversation when things are picked up on those stump mics.
It just prompts, you know, the wider debate as well about audio in sport. I mean, I think it adds to the game of rugby, because I quite like hearing some of the referees' decisions. Whether it would work in football, would it work in football or not?
No, not at all.
But that comes down to a respect thing.
It comes down to respect, but there's supposed to be these new respect laws at the moment with the referees and that. But I just feel that over the recent weeks that it's now coming back into it. You know, they're not leaving the referees alone, and
unfortunately, and you hear it as well. You can hear it, not just like with you know on the commentary, but you can hear it from it. The commentator, fans. Your fans, you can just sometimes hear that, you know, alternative language, shall we say, and it doesn't sound great. So I think on the pitch, you know, these guys are meant to be role models, and do, you know, like Chris said, you know, the children do not need to be listening to that.
Yeah, I want to push you as well on this, Tom. You cricket, you live and breathe it a lot more than I do. Sledging, a fan of it? You think there is a place for it?
I think, I mean, I'd be interested to get it, Giles. I think it's part and parcel of any sport. It's gone down in sort of cricketing folklore because there's been some very clever sledging, you know, and we've had the great Steve Waugh, Mark Waugh, who made it, you know, took it to another level. Alan Border, who sort of put the foundations there. The Waugh brothers then took it to another level, this whole mental disintegration, getting into somebody's head. And it's got iconic stories that are around the back of it. It's come to the fore now because of the stump mic technology. And you think of what recent ones, you know, this whole thing with the Johnny Abesta headbutt because it was picked up on the stump mic. Yeah. Ben Stokes, not his issue with at the nightclub in Bristol, but his latest match fee thing was because he was picked up on stump mic swearing after he'd bowled a bad ball. You know, can you take that out of the game? You know, if somebody is reprimanding themselves in the middle of a cricket field because they've bowled a bad ball, and they use a bit of language to chide themselves. The fact that it's picked up on the stump and then he gets docked 10 grand or whatever it was, half his match fee, I don't agree with that. And that's why I think it will always be part of cricket, the sledging that is. It would always be part of sport in general. It's just we are making such an issue of it now because we are, as you say, by the media companies, encouraged to be part of it.
True.
Because we can hear everything that's going on.
But there is definitely a line that you can cross in that sledging, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think.
And is that the players to self-govern themselves?
Completely,
or does the umpire
yeah.
Why?
It's been going on for generations. And I'm sure it goes on football fields. I'm sure it goes on rugby fields. As much as they're as polite as they are to referees, etc. And everyone goes, oh, I wish we were all like rugby players. They're so polite, aren't they? Yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir. Wait till he turns his back, fella, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it goes on, and it's all about self-governing, both as an individual, but also within the team unit itself, coming together, having a word afterwards. You know, the heat, how often do we hear about, you know, what gets said in the heat of battle? And yet, when you get off afterwards and you've had a cold shower and you calm down, go and see them, shake a hand, and have it out then.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. Dale, in terms of football, and Tom's right to point out, the word sledging, very much used in cricket, it goes on. That mental, that psychological warfare goes on in any sport.
Oh, most definitely.
Any time did it cross the line with you when you were playing back in the day?
Wow.
I'm sure to the jungle at the in Paradise, the Parkhead?
Well, most definitely. Without a doubt, within the Old Firm derby games, without a doubt. But I think even in generally all through my career, you know, it's happened. And also, as I remember a game as well where we played Crystal Palace at home, it was Mark Bright, Ian Wright, Salako. You know, they're a little bit nasty as well. They used to get in your face as well. And then it was Andy Townsend and Trevor Putney and them sort of boys. And I always remember it all kicking off in the tunnel afterwards and that. And then they actually then, that, you know, it was out of sight, out of mind, sort of, yeah. So to speak, in them days, you know, they didn't have the 200 cameras around the outside of the pitch and that, and it took itself into the tunnel, and then it actually took itself then into the players' lounge as well. Incredible.
It kicked off.
Absolutely, it kicked off massively.
Because of things that were being said that were underhand.
Said, and obviously things that happened on the pitch as well.
Interesting. But I think you're right, Tom. The modern day, the technology now in sport, with all the cameras, you cannot do anything wrong on a football field, on a cricket, without it being picked up. We're seeing it in tennis now as well. You're not telling me for one second that back in the day, John McEnroe didn't say something that was derogatory, that he didn't say something that would have right now, in today's day and age, would have offended an awful lot of people. Mm. He did, undoubtedly. I think he would admit that himself. But back then, wasn't picked up on the net cord microphone or on the cameras.
I mean, we're sitting in a bit of a jungle at the moment. I mean, it's even happened on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out with Dennis Wise. The ex-footballer having a little bit of a kick at one of the other players, one of the other contestants as well, having a go at him, and it happens on there because everything's picked up. Yeah. Whichever show it is, it might be a reality show, TV reality show. And if it happens in football, my word, what would... Well, half the players be banned.
Well, we've seen it. I mean, John Terry, he was found guilty of racist insults towards Patrice Evra, Luis Suarez as well. We've seen that, and again, it comes back to, I've no problem with psychological warfare, getting into the mind of an opponent, but there is a line to be crossed. Mm.
Completely. And but if you can't self-manage that, can't control it, you shouldn't be playing the game at the top level.
Some players live on that. Some players live on the edge, and if you do take that out of their game, then, put it like this, you can imagine Vinnie Jones. Can you imagine Vinnie Jones, in this day and age, if it was the fact that there was microphones and everything, it just take away the nastiness of the sort of player that he was completely. You know, I mean, he wasn't the greatest player in the world anyway, but, you know...
Thank God he's not here, Dale.
Yeah, exactly.
He is a great actor.
Terry Earlock, you know, these are players in yesteryear. Look, we're looking at Chelsea and West Ham today. Stuart Pearce, the assistant manager of West Ham at the moment. Imagine him as well. I remember playing against Stuart Pearce. He used to talk to me all the time. Within 2 minutes...
Trying to get in the head.
Always tried it. I remember, I said this to Tom, you're a 17-year-old playing at Highfield Road when he played for Coventry. He thought, I'm a 17-year-old, just come out of the youth team. He's an experienced, come out of non-league football, absolutely sliced me in half. Put me in row Z after 2 minutes. But he would just continuously talk to you all through the game. I can tell you this as well, that weren't pleasant as well, but that's the sort of person he is. That's the way, you know, he played his game. And look, he wouldn't have been the player that he was then, and obviously the coach that he is now to be like that. And because looking at the West Ham performance today, I don't think Stuart Pearce would have, even though they're 1-0 up at half time, would have probably gone there and saying, well done, boys. I think it'd be completely opposite.
I think the other thing, just to add on to the chat with regards to sledging cricket, is this, and I'd be interested to know if it happens in other sports, because certainly in cricket, we talk about self-policing individuals, yeah, but it's also about the team policing individuals within that team. And if David Warner does cross a line, invariably it's going to be, you know, the England boys that are going to get upset, but it will be the Australian boys that self-police and go, you know what, Davey?
But do they?
Yeah.
But they definitely
do
that.
Yeah, that definitely happens in cricket. I know that happens in cricket. Even when you're, maybe not at the heat of the moment, but in retrospect, after the game, when things have been said, you know, Joe Root goes over to Steve Smith, says, you know, that's bang out of order. That's when it happens. That's when things get sorted out.
Because this story that Matt Prior has fueled by saying that he has heard that the Aussie boys have overstepped the mark. Steve Smith, and the quote I read was that the Aussie boys are being smarter during this Ashes tour with their sledging. What that means, I'm not quite sure. But if Matt Prior, now Johnny Bairstow's come out and say, you know what, I'm drawing a line under the sand. If they do what they've done, and we can speculate what they've done, again, then I'm going to probably get angry and throw the gloves off. I just wonder, Tom, was it systematic? Was it one individual going at Johnny, or
well,
we know
that David Warner is leading the charge at the moment. Nathan Lyon's been had a bit of
a bit
chirpy as well. But Warner's got rid of the old they called him the vicar, didn't they, for ages? Well, after he got reprimanded,
yes,
he became a very good boy because he's a bit of a broken. He's got a bit of a rough past as well. He became holier than thou, very very clean off the back of that. He's changed. He's gone back to the pit bull in this series, and you can see it. He's right up in front of people's faces. Thing is, he's delivering on the pitch. England are not. The majority of them are not. And therefore, that gives him kudos to do that.
100%. A lot of texting on this subject this afternoon. It's, let's get to some of these if we can, because Himadri has been in touch. This isn't really a surprise. Australians have a history of using the mental disintegration, as you said, Tom, as part of their team and media, something which the touring teams face. England should have been prepared better to face the heat. Raj has said in cricket, sledging isn't needed. And Himadri's come back and said, banning everything isn't a solution. We all like a bit of needle in the middle. It keeps things engaging. They are humans out there playing, not robots. Raj comes back to say it should just be a battle between ball and bat, nothing to do with the mental side of things. But of course, mental is part and parcel. It's not just the physical, it is the mental. That is what makes sport so unique. And a real polarising of opinions. Some people believe sledging isn't needed. Some would argue it's a sign of weakness that you need in order to do it. Others say that it is part and parcel. You've just got to stand up and you know, go toe-to-toe with them.
Interesting aside as well, and again, moving away from cricket, but sticking with this whole idea of things being picked up on the pitch. That weird incident we had with Man City Southampton a couple of weeks, was it last week, a couple of weeks ago, where Pep Guardiola, was it Nathan Redmond that you had a go at?
Oh, yeah. That's strange. After the game. Bizarre.
Yeah. But what I found really strange about that, or interesting, a little observation talking of sledging, is if you look back at it, and I picked up on it on the time, but you look back at it, both of them cover their mouths.
Yeah. Footballers are famed for it.
But you know, because they've become very savvy, you know, because...
All footballers do it now. And look, even rugby players
even
at the end of games.
Do it.
Owen Farrell's famed for it as well. The camera will zoom up into his face at full-time whistle. He'll be talking to an opponent. The hand goes over the lips so that there's no lip readers. I mean, my goodness, newspapers. They're employing lip readers to look at what managers are saying, for goodness sake. And you can understand why that is, because they don't want to be stitched up. They do not want to be waking up on a Sunday morning reading stories about what they've said. And let's be frank, some of the time times. They'll be slagging off their own teammates. They'll be slagging off an opponent. They may even have one or two choice words to say about their own managers. They're voicing their opinion with friends, because at the end of a game, and you'll know this better than most, Dale, at the end of a game, you've got friends on the opposition. For those 90 minutes, it's you against them. At the end of the game, though, you've got friends on the
opposition. Absolutely, you're right, Chris, because a lot of the players, obviously, from
international teammates,
you know. You're right, Tom, that was an interesting one with Pep and obviously Nathan Redmond. And I think it's been said that it was all complimentary what he was saying to him, but it just looked like he was completely having a right go at him. It was two or three days of press about it, and then obviously it stopped. But Chris is right, you know, as players, what fascinates me is the fact that they all go on social media, they all tweet, they're on Instagram and everything else, and all of a sudden they're saying everything about each other on there. But when they're on the pitch, they cover the hand over their mouth, and it might be saying, look, you know, come and join us, you'll earn an extra 50,000 a week if you come and join us. But
they're all worried about the media. They're all worried.
Everyone is. You know, unfortunately, it's not going to go away. She doesn't know how to deal with it.
It's interesting that you're talking about miking up sports and where it would work and wouldn't work. I was talking to someone over the weekend again about this, and he plays a lot of squash, high level squash, and apparently that's in negotiation at the moment. They're trying to get the umpires or the referees, whatever they are in squash, mic'd up to explain to viewers, some of the decisions from the umpires, because you know if you ask for a what do they call them in squash, not a stroke or whatever,
orange or black currant.
What are they? Strike? Not a strike. That's a baseball. Stroke.
Yeah, stroke.
It's a stroke,
tennis,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's a stroke.
Same with squash. Yeah. So if you have a stroke, and there is no explanation of it to the viewing public. So if you want to get the old referee mic'd up, that would make sense. However, apparently squash players have also got some fairly fruitful language, will be picked up as well.
Yeah, of course they do. I was down at the Dubai Opera back end of June, and it amazed me. It's my first opportunity to watch elite level squash, and it amazed me just how much the players were actually having a go at the umpire throughout the match. And it's part and parcel, isn't it? It's a competitive sport at the end of the day. It's a competitive game. At the end of the day, you want to be victorious. Of course you do. And that doesn't change. We see time and time again in tennis as well. The umpire is mic'd up. He has the choice, or she has the choice, to hit the button when they're announcing 30-15, 30-all. The players will remonstrate. The players will not be happy with the decision. And you see them push away the mic, but it's always picked up. The television microphones will pick up the conversation that is then had. It is part and parcel, but where the issue lies with regards to sledging and cricket, and I'm with you on this, Tom, they need to look at it, do the cricket executives. But of course, all the money spent by TV, right, broadcasters and rights holders, means that they'll want those mic stumps turned up because, controversy sells.
So therefore, maybe the onus here is therefore on the players. If you're talking about footballers being clever, they know that there's a camera on them every single moment they're out there on the field. Cricketers, you know,
just Chinese whispers.
Well, no, just get away from the stump mic. Yeah. You know, if things are going to be said, I mean, it's not rocket science, is it?
And if you're getting fined, I always say if you hit an individual in the pocket, I am Scottish at the end of the day, but if you hit them in the pocket, then very, very quickly, if they start losing match fees and they start getting heavy fines, then very, very quickly they will. But it's interesting. Let us know your thoughts. 4001 is the simple solution to all of this. Just turn off the mic stumps and the stump mic, sorry, and then what that will do is it'll allow the individuals out there in the middle to have it out with each other.
Let them have it, you know, proper old slanging match.
Because you're right, you are right to point that out. If the mic, if the stump mic hadn't picked up the headbutt, then the Aussie boys and the English boys, nothing would have been said. That would have been a story for 15 years sitting with yourself.
But then again, you know, so it brings up all the implications of SNCO, and you know, given the fact that SNCO is now part of the referral process and TMO, how do you get that? So the thinking needs to be going into it. Well, but just on the back of this, do have a little read of Johnny Bairstow's column in the Daily Mail at the moment. It makes for a good read. And it is intriguing that there is obviously still bad blood between these two teams, and I think we haven't heard the end of it.
Absolutely not, no. 2-0 up are Australia. Geoffrey Boycott as well, he is part of the Test Match Special for the BBC. He's been giving his thoughts because, well, we've talked enough about what's going on off the pitch. Let's talk about what's on the pitch, because, of course, Australia got over the line down at in Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval. A 2-0 lead now. They're just one win away from clinching the Ashes series. Let's get Geoffrey Boycott's thoughts. He was asked the question whether England have a chance, and this is what he had to say.
Why not?
Because they're better than us. It's as simple as that. They've got better bowlers. They've got four bowlers. They've got a spinner who takes wickets and can be difficult to play. We've got a spinner who's making nothing. He's not making any difficulty for them. He's almost non-existent. We've got two fast-medium bowlers. They've got one fast-medium bowler who's very good, but they've also got two genuinely fast bowlers, one left-arm, one right. And we've got two fast-medium bowlers of high quality, particularly when it's English conditions, as we saw here in the evening session, and next morning when the ball moves around, they're as good as anybody. In Australia, you get dry, grassless pitches, hot sun out, the ball rarely ever moves around, so that nullifies them a bit. You need pace. And then our second string of bowlers don't really look as they're going to bowl people out. They didn't in Brisbane. They didn't here first innings. But then when it moves around in the evening, we're back to the English type seamer. They look quality bowlers. But you're not going to get many times where you get English conditions in Australia. It's freak to have a day-night test match. The three coming up in the daytime. So there's your problem in the bowling. And in the batting, we don't make enough runs. We made 302, 190, we made 450 in two innings here, 460. You need to make 460 in one innings, then you give your bowlers, even medium paces, something to bowl at. We do not make enough runs. Cook's not made in many runs, and he's a top player. It's unfortunate. He's trying like hell, I'm sure. But some of the other guys are playing poor shots. They're getting themselves out. And, you know, 220, 230, that's not going to win any matches. When it comes to the tough moments, they're better than us.
So no chance?
I don't think so. Nope.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.